And once again, good morning, brothers and sisters. And once again, welcome back, everybody. A little thought for you for the day. Now, if you ever make even a casual study of history, one thing you'll discover is that almost every age in history thought that their time was a time of terrible moral decay. That they were worse than the generation before them, and that they were worse still than the generation before that. It's really interesting. It's almost a universal, it's a psychological phenomenon, and you see it in almost every society, even those times in history that you would imagine would be the most upright to the point of being, you know, like ramrod straight, like, for example, the Puritans in colonial Massachusetts literally thought their society was going to hell in a handbasket, right? However, just because it's almost a universally observed phenomenon, it does not logically follow that it's always an illusion. Let me share something with you that you might find interesting, okay? This comes from 1958. They did a survey to identify the top 5 behavioral problems among high school students in 1958. You ready for this? Top 5 problems. Students who didn't do their homework. Students who defaced their textbooks. Students who threw spitballs. Students who left doors open and the lights on. And students who ran in the halls. Top 5 problems. It was a survey done among high school principals, and they did it for years and years, so I kept on looking. 30 years later, top 5 problems among high school students behaviorally in 1988. Teen pregnancy, rape, AIDS, drug abuse, school violence. So I kept on looking at last year's results. And after I read them, I thought to myself, I don't want to say that from the pulpit. Right? Some things are better left unsaid. So listen, just because it's common doesn't mean that it's always an illusion. However, there's only one point that I want to make with you here this morning. Only one point. And that is, even though it's hard to live in a time, you know, it's a burden when things are going badly, it doesn't help to complain about it. It just doesn't do anybody any good. And I hear this over and over and over, belly aching and complaining about how bad everything is. And in one sense, you know, you can sympathize. Okay, I get it. It's not exactly the greatest time ever. But nobody's helped by complaining. Listen, for some funny reason, God, in his providence, has decided to put you with your full plate of circumstances to live in this time. And you want to know why he did it? Because God seems to think that you can make a difference. That's why. It's no accident. I love the way St. Thomas More once put this. He said that no times are so bad that a good man can't live in them. So the only thing that really matters is not the troubles that are going on out there. The only thing that really matters is what's your response to God's voice right now. There is plenty of evil in the world. There's plenty of good in the world. But do you realize that you decide what takes root in your soul? Who decides? Only you. And that leads us to the little parable that we just heard. Jesus tells us the parable of the sower and the seed. Now, Jesus preaches 37 parables in the Gospels, 37 parables. And of those, there's only 2 that he thinks are so important that he explains the parable himself. And this is one of them. A sower went out to sow, and some of this seed fell on the path, and some of this seed fell on the thorns, and some of the seed fell on rocky ground. Some of the seed fell on good soil and yielded a harvest of 30 or 60 or 100-fold. Fun fact for the day, in Jesus' time, an ordinary harvest was 7-fold. 7-fold. A bumper crop was 10-fold. So when Jesus talks about 30, 60, 100, he's talking about something utterly miraculous. Got to be the work of God, but we'll come back We'll come back to that in just a second. Okay, but at first blush, you hear this parable and you think Jesus is talking about fate. Because come on now, poor little seed isn't at fault if it's thrown on the path and it got eaten up by a bird. Is that the seed's fault? No. You think Jesus is talking about fate, and then you realize that Jesus isn't talking about four different kinds of people out there in the world, some that make good and some that just don't. These four different seeds, they're four different responses, and all of them are in our own hearts right now, all four of them. Because a parable, you know, it's a really interesting thing. People think that Jesus spoke in parables because he wanted to make everything clear. I've mentioned this before. Jesus did not speak in parables because he wanted to make everything clear. Because parables aren't clear. There's something in every parable that doesn't make sense. Sends you home scratching your head, wondering what this was all about. Now, Jesus spoke in parables not to make everything clear. Jesus spoke in parables to make everybody think. And there's a funny thing about parables. If your heart is disposed to God, you will benefit from what you think about. And if your heart is not disposed to God, it will not help you. That's actually what Jesus says in this mysterious part in the middle, you know, where he says, you know, like Isaiah said, they'll hear, but they won't understand. They'll look, but they'll never see. All four of these in your own heart. Sometimes you hear the voice of God. Let's just call it the sting of conscience, okay, just to make it clearer. And you think to yourself, goodness sakes, if I say yes to this, it's really going to cost me. And so you shut off your heart. Or you hear the voice of God in your heart and you think to yourself, goodness sakes, if I say yes to this, I am in this for the long haul. It's going to be a long, slow slog. And you shut off your soul. Or you hear the voice of God and you think to yourself, that makes perfect sense, that's perfectly good, but goodness sakes, I don't want to say yes to it. So you shut off your mind. And who's the one who bears fruit? The one who loves God with all of his heart, with all of his strength, with all of his mind, in a word, with all of his soul. Does that sound familiar? This is the great commandment from the book of Deuteronomy. Love the Lord your God with all of your heart, all your mind, all your soul, all your strength. That's the one who bears fruit. There's something else Jesus doesn't talk about in this parable. And it's probably because it's so obvious it almost doesn't need to be mentioned. But I'm going to mention this anyway. And that's this. Every single seed is meant to grow up. There's not a single seed that isn't fully equipped to grow up. And you know what that means? That means there's not one person in this world, and I mean not one exception, that God did not intend to become a saint. Now, don't misunderstand me. I don't necessarily mean a canonized saint. Don't get me wrong. Plenty of people in this world, they're not going to be canonized saints. Don't hold your breath. But what's a saint? What's a saint? Really very simple. Saint is a soul that's in heaven. Why are they in heaven? They're in heaven because they said yes to God with all of their heart, mind, soul, strength, held nothing back, became everything God intended us to be. And these people are moral miracles. They remind us what it looks like when someone says yes to God. True confessions here this morning. I think I've said this before. I'm Catholic because of the saints. You look at their lives and you just say, dear God, that's beyond any human capacity. God must be the author of that. Let me give you a couple examples here this morning. A more recently canonized saint, Saint Pier Giorgio Frassati. A saint we're never going to celebrate in this country because his feast day is the 4th of July, okay? But he died at the age of 24, just like our own Saint Therese, tender young age of 24. But what a life he lived. Tournament skier, mountain climber, you take one look at the guy, he looks like a model from Abercrombie and Fitch. Dies at the age of 24, but what a life. His father, a hardened atheist. And that's how he was raised. Until some point, something in his heart told him, the purpose of life is giving yourself away for the well-being of others. And you can't do that without God's strength. Something clicked in the mind of this kid, and he changed. snuck out of his house early in the morning so that he could get to daily mass, come back, climb in through the window, and pretend to be asleep so as not to upset his father. He had the most unusual way of evangelizing in all the history of the saints. He hustled pool. He went to the pool hall, and he bet guys. He'd say, listen, if you win, I'll pay you. But if I win, you got to come to church with me. And he brought him in by the dozens because he was an ace with a pool cue. And he began to give more and more and more. By the time of his death, he was personally assisting 125 underprivileged families. And the very last thing he said before he died was to give instructions as to how even after his death he could still help these poor people. He became everything God intended him to become. He didn't waste any time complaining about how bad his time in history was. He just heard the voice of God and made good. And you can too. Another one that I love, Pope John Paul II. After Pope John Paul II, all the little details of his life started to come out, things that he'd hidden. Do you realize that all that man did was give? That's all he did. He just gave and gave. If you gave him a gift, he'd give it away. He'd think, who can benefit from this? He wouldn't even accept new shoes. They say the only way to make John Paul II get new shoes was you had to buy them, scuff them up, run them through the washer, and hide them in his closet so he would think that they were used. Otherwise, he tried to give them away. When he was a cardinal in Poland under communism in Warsaw, he was under constant surveillance. And the authorities said, we've observed this man for years. He has no interest in material things. All he does is give them away. He was on a trip once pastoral trip to Rio de Janeiro. He's walking in the shanty villages in the hills outside Rio among these shacks that are made out of leftover scrap. He comes across this woman. What can I do to help this poor lady, he asks himself. He has nothing to give her. So he takes the ring off his finger, the ring that was given to him by Pope Paul VI when he became a cardinal, just gave it to her, figuring it would help her more than it helped him. And in the Blessed Sacrament, he'd go dozens of times a day to the Blessed Sacrament, perpetually spending his free time in prayer. One day his secretary is looking for the Pope. They can't find him anywhere, right? Some important phone call, some important meeting. Is he in the kitchen? No. Is he in his office? No. Is he in his room? No. God help us, we lost the Pope, right? Somebody says, check the chapel. And there he is in the chapel, face down on the ground, arms extended in the form of a cross, just like he was on the day that he was ordained, something that he did over and over and over again. Did he worry about how bad his times were? No. No. He became great. He became a moral miracle simply because he said yes to God. And what's the secret of it? I could go on and on with these stories. What's the secret of the saints? Did they have some eighth sacrament not available to the rest of us? Did they have some extra book of the Bible none of us have ever read before? No. No. They simply decided what they'd let take root in their soul and what they wouldn't. Somebody once asked Mother Teresa, what does it take to become a saint? She says, just say yes to Jesus and don't complicate the matter. Because in the end, there's only one thing that matters, no matter what your circumstances. Are you saying yes to God in your heart? Listen, the darker it becomes in this world, the clearer it's going to become to everyone where the light is coming from. I don't know about you, but I want to be counted among the children of light. How about you? St. Catherine of Siena once said, if you become all that God made you to be, you'll set the world on fire. So I'm so fond of saying, if today you hear his voice, harden not your hearts.